Big government and big tech team up on big AI. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. Right now, the federal government is piloting a response to Silicon Valley's AI boom, and it's using the National AI Research Resource, or NAIR, to do that. The NAIR is supposed to, quote, democratize access to AI by making gigantic and expensive AI models available to academic researchers. But as Sarah Myers-West pointed out in a recent op-ed in Foreign Policy magazine, the issue here is the government can't launch its own AI program without a potentially lucrative partnership with big tech.
You know, the tech industry now is tremendously concentrated, especially in artificial intelligence, in ways that both the access to resources needed to build AI, but also importantly, all of the incentive structures in research, in where, you know, products that might be developed using these resources get deployed, all roads kind of lead back to a small handful of large tech firms.
Let's talk more about that. The pilot version of NAIR brings together a number of government agencies like the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, as well as big tech companies like OpenAI, Anthropic, NVIDIA is on the list too. Can you explain the structure of this pilot project?
Yes. So the pilot project contains a few different components. One is it provides access for researchers who submit applications to be able to use government supercomputers. It also includes, you know, the ability to apply for access to government data sets. So these are data sets that are held by, you know, things like the Department of Energy or the Department of Geospatial Intelligence in order to be able to build models using these data sets. And then there's this third component, which is kind of like this marketplace of offerings from a number of different types of entities, most of whom are large tech companies who have said, we'll give API access for, you know, a certain number of researchers to be able to build off of our models for free. But this often comes with some strings attached where they've defined what types of researchers or what types of research they would want these resources to be used for.
And there's so much money at play here. You write that in the current iteration of NAIR, some of the biggest tech companies stand to benefit from this flow of taxpayer money into this very concentrated market for AI. Can you first explain that argument?
Yes. So if you look to the original NAIR proposal, the version that might be launched after the pilot, it's structured as a set of essentially licensing contracts that would go to cloud computing firms. Now, there's not that many cloud computing firms out there, and the largest by far are run by big tech companies. It's Google, Amazon, and Microsoft. And so the eventual likelihood is that any investment of taxpayer money is ultimately going to flow to the companies that have essentially monopolized cloud computing and access to computational power. If you go one layer down, that's NVIDIA, the largest chip maker. You know, if the idea is that artificial intelligence is meant to be at the forefront of innovation in this country, is our vision for the future going to be clouded by these companies' profit motive, and how do we change that? I don't think that we get there if all of the incentive structures continue to be set by the same handful of large companies that are already the incumbents.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Sarah Myers-West at the AI Now Institute. So when you hear the National Science Foundation say the NAIR will democratize AI, what do you make of that?
Well, I think when we think through what the end goal is here, we're going to need a better litmus test than just democratizing the sector. Instead, I think we really need to be asking questions that probe who benefits from the investments in this industry and you know, in AI, is that going to benefit society at large? I think that there's evidence, you know, if you look back to the ways that, you know, AI is already in deployment, already affecting people's lives, often it's in ways that either enable austerity measures, you know, they make things cheaper, they often result in the devaluation of work or depressing wages, or alternatively, they ramp up control, you know, whether that's, you know, in educational settings or in workplaces through, you know, increasing surveillance. You know, are those the ends that we want to be really investing in as a society? And really, more fundamentally, if you are to democratize AI, does that reach, you know, the needs of the many, or does that democratize within the hands of maybe slightly larger handful of companies?
So I'm going to characterize that answer as skeptical when you hear that yes. term. What do you think might be a better way to actually democratize access to AI then?
Well, I think, like I said, I'm not sure that democratizing access is necessarily the right end goal here. I think it's creating space for a broader public conversation about what kinds of AI do we want to build and what kinds of societal problems do we want to solve in which AI might play a role. You know, starting from, you know, the underlying question of like, what's the challenge that we're facing here? And is AI the right solution, rather than starting from the presumption that AI is inherently going to work to the good of society? Because I think we have some examples where it certainly can, but we have just as many that it's currently not.
But it feels like the train has left the station on AI. Are you kind of saying maybe just AI is not the answer? Because we can't really stop the trajectory, it feels like.
It certainly feels that way, and especially this year, after this, you know, tremendous amount of excitement, but also anxiety about, you know, how AI is going to shape our future. But it's important to keep in context that AI has, you know, an almost 70-year history, and what AI even means has changed over time. There's still a lot of scope to reshape the incentive structures and the goalposts of this industry and the field at large. And I think starting from the perspective that there's really nothing that is inevitable about AI, that the future very much can be shaped and needs to be shaped by all of us who are, you know, who will be affected by it.
That was Sarah Myers-West at the AI Now Institute. To be sure, the purpose of the NAIR isn't just some altruistic mission of giving researchers access to high-tech resources. As Sarah points out in her piece for Foreign Policy, for the U.S. government, it's about global competition. Back in 2021, the National Security Commission on AI put out a report calling on the government to step up its AI investment or risk getting lapped by China within the decade. The report argued the way to win is by having the government and private sector join forces, which is pretty much exactly what's happening with the NAIR initiative. This NAIR pilot, however, is still just that, a pilot. It was established when President Biden signed his executive order on AI last fall, but with a budget of $140 million, it's operating on something of a shoestring by government standards. As Sarah puts it, it's a small-scale version of a much bigger plan that would cost $2.6 billion and would require approval from Congress before it sees the light of day. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.